I summoned Neubauer from Holland, and on the 13th of July, 1698, laid the cornerstone of the orphan house in the name of God. Providence had blessed me so far that I had on hand a considerable quantity of lumber, though not enough for the edifice, but for other materials and funds to pay workmen. I must look from week to week to the hand of the living God, who had already given me such abundant reason to trust him. I counted at first on building the whole structure of wood, and the foundation was laid in that expectation, and was therefore light and comparatively unsubstantial. But the architect pronounced that the lot of land so suitable to a more substantial edifice, and remonstrated with me so earnestly, and others joined in with him, to so great an extent, that I felt almost persuaded to venture deeper and build in a more suitable manner. I soon came unexpectedly into the possession of a fine quarry of stone, suitable for the foundation work, and this seemed another inducement to build of masonry rather than of wood. Yet all this would have been without avail to me, unless I had felt able to trust entirely in the providence of God to bless my undertaking. Although I had begun with no ready money to pay the laborers, yet God opened the way for me to secure, without any difficulty, the services of a sufficient number of workmen to go on with the house. It was my custom, and one to which they yielded a ready compliancy, to commence the day and to end the week with prayer. And God showed his special care for the undertaking in protecting all the workmen from every serious danger, and in granting speedy recovery to those who were slightly injured during the process of the building. Meantime, the work advanced so rapidly, despite its magnitude and the size of the lot of land, together with the hardness of the soil to be removed for the cellar, that in 1 year from the day when the cornerstone was laid, the roof had covered the whole. And God had silenced the sneers of those who had made light of the whole undertaking, and who had gone so far as to blasphemously say that they would hang themselves on the walls when they should be high enough. At Easter 1700, the orphans and students began to take their meals in the new building. Very soon all the rooms of the lower story were completed, and by Easter 1701, the rooms of the upper story were ready for occupation. The King of Prussia showed his appreciation of the work by giving 100,000 bricks for the walls and 30,000 tiles for the roof, which was a great help to me and won my heartiest gratitude. The king also granted me the royal license, and by the act of incorporation raised the orphan house to the rank of an institution recognized by the government. And now God, who had done all this for the benefit of the poor and unfriended orphans, and had become a father to them, inclined the heart of a prominent Christian gentleman to devote a portion of his wealth to found a home for poor widows and to place it under my care. So I bought a house just outside of Haley, and fitted it up for the accommodations for four widows, a servant and steward, and soon after opened it to this limited number. My means allowed me to provide them with all that was absolutely necessary for life, and to give them about 18 pence a week for pocket money, besides all that they might earn by sewing and spinning. In case of sickness, they were provided with medicine and a doctor. Prayers were held with them every day, conducted by the steward of their home, and we have reason to think that the influence of these widows' retreat was very great, and that their prayers redounded to the benefit of the whole city, as well as the institution which I had under my charge. End of chapter 5, having been read by Peter John Parisi, is also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Faith Worked Perfected by Augustus Herman Franke. Chapter 6. Striking instances of God's providence in delivering me from pecuniary embarrassments while going on with work. I have already given a number of examples to show how graciously and manifestly God anticipated every want and always made my way ready for me while I knew it not. Yet those instances were in reality so striking as well as numerous that I will speak more at length of them and recount them. I do not need, however, to dwell on the general principle of faith in a living God, which was my starting point of action. Beginning without any other capital than this, and continuing without any other than this, strengthened every step of my way in this belief, I went on not only receiving orphans and poor students under my charge, but venturing on the building of my orphan house. It must be seen at a glance that a proceeding so unusual must be interesting to trace step by step, that the usual receipts and expenditures would not come and go in the usual fashion, and that the novelties of the undertaking would bring much doubt and perhaps despondency, or, if entirely successful, much quickening of faith. The following instances will make all this clear. Before the Easter of 1696 came, I was reduced to unusual straits, hardly knowing what we should do the next week. I had not yet become accustomed to be so tightly pressed, but God opened a way at just the right hour, for precisely at the moment of my sorest need, someone, I know not to this day whom, whether man or woman, old or young, was moved to send me £150. The Lord repay that opportune giver. At another time, we were reduced almost to destitution, and the steward came to me with the tidings that he was out of meat and grain and wool and clothing. I made it at once the subject of special prayer. A person, not of wealth, but of influence, providentially present, became aware of our need, and letting our trying circumstances be known to others, we were at once relieved and our wants supplied. God asserted the truth of his word, that he hears the young raven's cry. Directly after my prayer for help in our distress, while I was taking my dinner, someone knocked at my door. I opened it and found an old friend, who offered me £7. Three more followed thereafter, and so all my wants were supplied, and God showed himself true to us. In 1698, a Christian lady sent me a ducat, about 9 English shillings, with this word, that once a ducat had come to her most opportunely for her wants, and that she sent me one with the hope and prayer that God would bless my poor orphans by putting into my hands a great pile of ducats. Very soon after, another friend brought me 25 ducats more. The same day, a person in Sweden sent me 2 ducats. And not long after, I received through the post 25 more without the donor's name. Not many days elapsed before an old friend of the institution, who had given me money before, sent me 20 ducats. And not long after all this, Prince Louis of Wurttemberg died, and in his last hours drew from his drawer a satin purse containing 500 ducats and said, "This is for the orphan house at Haley." This last gift was of inestimable service in enabling me to go on with the building. When this heap of ducats lay before me on the table, I remembered the prayer of the pious lady who sent me the single ducat, and wrote that she hoped that God would send me a great pile of ducats for my orphans. In February 1699, I experienced again the most trying want. It was the severest proving of my faith. Louder was destitute, and I knew not which way to turn. I kept revolving over in my mind constantly this verse, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Yet the care of the temporal was constantly wrestling in my soul with my care for the eternal. I had a great effect to cherish my faith in God, undisturbed by the want of the present time. As I paid out the last piece of money, I uttered in my heart this prayer, "Lord, look in compassion on my need." I went forth from my chamber at once, on my way to the university, to deliver my usual lecture to my class, and unexpectedly found a student below, who handed me a package containing £14, which a friend more than 200 miles away had sent me for the use of the orphan house. And so it always was, that although no half week went by without bringing heavy demands on me, yet God always anticipated me and raised up means at the most opportune moment to meet my necessities, and at the same time to strengthen my faith. Gradually I grew strong and untroubled in the conviction that each hour would bring the help to bear its burden, and my faith could not be shaken, that God would carry me through and grant me to see the fulfillment of all my plans and hopes. On the 10th of March, I was wholly out of funds. To my surprise, a public hangman came in to see me and brought me 16 shillings, which, coming from such a quarter, gave me new assurance of the favor of God. Soon after this, we were out of everything. The steward came in with his accounts and showed me how sore was our need. I had no money for him, and he had nothing for the household. It was another of our dark hours.
I bid him hope on and have faith, and then continued on my own labor. I was dictating till I had finished what I was on, and then retired to prayer. But just as I was closing the door to my room, a merchant appeared and placed in my hand a roll containing £250 to be appropriated to the needs of the orphan house. I thought of the words of the Holy Writ, Isaiah 65:24. Before they call, I will answer, and while they are yet speaking, I will hear. Going into my chamber, I offered a prayer of thanksgiving instead of supplication, for my wish and expectation had been changed into perfect fulfillment. On the 21st of March, I received a letter from the post enclosing 42 cans in this rude couplet. One raised from sickness by the Lord gives this God's goodness to record. I do not know whence it came, but it was most opportune, for we were entirely without funds. About Michaelmas, we were again reduced to great need, but the weather was so fine and invigorating that it gladdened my heart, and I felt like even exclaiming, how good it is to have nothing, and to rest entirely on God and His constant providence. I was entirely confident that a way would be open for us out from our place of need, and felt perfect repose in my spirit. The master mason who had come once before to inquire whether I had any money to pay off the workmen with came again and asked, is anything come yet? I answered, no, but I have faith in God. Scarcely had I said the word when a student came to me with $30 in his hands, which he said came from a donor who wished his name to remain unknown. I went at once to the master workman and asked him how much money he needed to pay off the men. He answered, $30. Have you no need of more? I asked, no. I told him then how wonderfully God had remembered us, providing just the sum needed, and the incident served for the strengthening of his faith as well as mine. Not long after, when I hardly knew which way to turn in order to go on with the building, I received through the post £80 with a note from a student stating that that sum had been given him for the use of the orphan house. I cannot tell how much this confirmed my belief in the kind providence that was leading us through darkness to light. One day we were in such want that I repeated with unwonted easy earnestness the petition, give us this day our daily bread. Then I quietly, trustfully waited, being sure that help would presently come. And true enough, my prayer had not long been uttered when a well-known friend rapped at the door and put into my hands £80. My earnest prayer was answered. In the year 1700, I was sick for 8 weeks. At last, I was able to walk out to thank God for permitting me to enjoy again the blessings of light and air and exercise and society and work. On my walk, a paper was given me, and another on my return, each being a check for £20, and with the second one, a letter of great kindness and encouragement, bidding me Godspeed in my work. This letter and check were from a merchant residing more than 500 miles away. At another time, a Christian nobleman was visiting me and inspecting the institution. He saw with pain how marvelous were our circumstances, but unfortunately, he was himself poor and unable to assist us. Yet the same day, he met a wealthy friend, described our work, and received from him a gift of £10 for us, which he brought with tears. So rejoiced was he at being able to minister thus unexpectedly to our wants. At another time of want, a merchant who lived 800 miles from Haley sent me £5 in South Germany currency, asked me to take the trouble of expending it in behalf of the orphan house. Two other donations of the same amount each soon followed. Another time, when we were hard-pressed, God moved the heart of a pious peasant to bring all the money he could hold in his hands. It was £1 in small change. At another time still, the nobleman brought me all that he could hold in both hands. It was £4.08. End of chapter 6, having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Faith, Work, Perfected. Chapter 7. Special Providences Continued. It has often happened that when friends have been present and have heard of the wonderful manner in which God had secured us, they have been disposed to do something for us, some instances of which I will mention. There was present Once, a Christian stranger who gave me £4 for the poor. And while he was still with me at dinner, there came a lad who brought me £4, and a written promise that the same amount should follow every year, if the Lord should give health and strength. The lad would not say, however, who sent him, but asked for a receipt and went away. My guest was so affected by this circumstance that he immediately added £10 to his gift. The promise to give me the £4 yearly, I might add, was literally fulfilled. Of course, the work on which I was engaged was largely spoken about, and it was often the case that when people heard how wonderfully God had blessed my labors or read about the orphan house, they felt constrained to assist me. A nobleman, for instance, after reading about the work, devoted £4 yearly to it, and always made his remittance promptly. Once, when I took some ducats to a broker to be changed into North German currency, when he learned that it was for the poor and the orphans, he added £4 as his own gift. It happened once that I was in great need of £20, but I did not know which way to turn to get it, let alone 20. So I didn't know which way to get one, let alone 20. The steward came to me and told me how destitute the house was. I had nothing for him, and told him to come after dinner. Meanwhile, I betook myself to prayer. In the afternoon he came, but I had nothing for him, and begged him come again in the evening. A friend visited me in the after part of the day, and he and I joined in prayer. Yet in spite of the necessities of my position and our urgent needs, I did not feel constrained to ask importunately, but on the other hand was moved to thanksgiving to God for all his old past mercies, not only to me, but to all the saints of old. When this good friend took his leave and I opened the front door, there stood on the one side of the entrance the steward, who had come again to know if there I had anything for him, and on the other side a gentleman who handed me a purse containing £30, contributed in behalf of the orphan house. What would be clearer to me than that the cause I loved and labored for was under the direct care of God, the eternal living God, who not for a moment sleeps, and who still testifies that he was to our fathers, so is he still to us. At one time I was in need of £6 to pay the workmen with. They were then visiting me some strangers, one of whom had formerly promised me £2, and the other 16 shillings, but had appeared to have forgotten the promise. Meanwhile, I needed the money sorely, yet I had to send my master workman empty-handed away, telling him that there stands the orphan house, and up there in the heaven dwells God, and doubtless he will provide for us. He went back and found the workmen standing together and waiting for their pay. Unexpectedly, a friend came up, and the master workman told him of the difficulty he was in. He at once lent him £3, but before he had fairly counted it out and made it over, I received a gift of £6, which met all our present needs. At the end of the very next week, I was in want again, and it so happened that Friday was the day for me to settle my household accounts, and Saturday, there's the building. Yet there was no money on hand for either, but I felt sure it would come all right. I was confident that God would show me a clear token of his care. I quoted the divine promise, 1 Samuel 7:12, to the steward. Hitherto hath the Lord helped us, and had no doubting about the end. The next day brought £10. Another time our necessities were so urgent that the steward was compelled to sell a silver spoon which had been given to us, and yet not even that met our wants. But just then came in most opportunely, when the steward was almost giving up to despair, £20, 12 of which were needed at once. 2 or 3 hours after this, I received a letter stating that a friend had 10 tons and a half of garden produce on the way for me. When the steward saw this double manifestation of God's care, he felt deeply pained at the wicked faithlessness of his heart, and resolved that he would never again would he distrust the Lord's readiness to provide. Oftentimes when we felt ourselves destitute and no large gift came in, we would find in the box nailed up at the door a thaler, T-H-A-L-E-R, or a ducat, or a double ducat piece, each for present needs, and to show the watchful care of God. I cannot, need not go further into detail. Other guests, some of them scores of pounds at a time, I received, and as a general rule, just when they were most needed. I have entered fully enough into these things to show how wonderfully God anticipated all our wants and that us just at the hour of need. I ought to say, however, that these gifts were by no means from the rich alone. That verse of Paul, 2 Corinthians 8:2, was eminently true of some of my benefactors. The abundancy of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Those who could not give money gave what they could. Tin plates and cups, flax and yarn, linen, caps, hats, and stockings. Sometimes complete suits of clothing, corn, peas, meat, fish, books, beer, salt, feather beds, and bedding, webs of cloth, and remnant, silver forks and spoons, gold rings, costly stones, and jewelry of all sorts. In one word, gifts of all kinds and degrees of value, all useful in their way, or capable of being converted into money, and all testifying that a watchful, untiring God and a loving Father had the orphan house in his faithful keeping, that its interests were always dear to him, and that he never despised my prayers, nor disregarded my faith in his constant providence. It would be delightful, of course, for me to enter into a detailed summary of all the gifts to us in the touching and cheering words which have often accompanied them. Since the time of our sore money trials were over, hardly a day has passed without bringing in a donation, either large or small. Ministers struggling to live on narrow incomes have sent us a few shillings, or a pound, or 10, or 20, or 50. Pious students at the university, out of their meagerness funds, have straightened themselves to help us. Widows, not a few, have sent their gifts, and with them their prayers. Children have sacrificed the pennies which they had laid up for playthings and sweetmeats, that the orphan children might have a home. I have even had one little gift of a penny, where I knew that poverty in its most trying form made even that a sacrifice, and it was more to my heart than many pounds would have been from the rich. Nor have these donations been from Germany alone, but from Poland, Sweden, Denmark, Russia, France, England, and in fact, from almost all the countries of Christendom, I have received them. Indeed, from England, I have had some of my largest gifts, the entire record, and I have kept it entirely. Of all the monies, the articles of jewelry, silver plate, precious stones, clothing, food, and presents, either to be used or to be sold for the benefit of the institution, would fill a volume of much larger size than this. I am amazed as I look back and read page upon page of such records as these. From a poor student, 12 shillings. From an Australian merchant, 10 pounds. From a farmer a little way out of Haley, 3 tons of vegetables. From a Christian mother, a diamond ring, which I sold for 30 pounds. From a widow, 2 pounds, with a reminder of the promise attending the widow's mite. From another widow, 10 pence. From a barbarian nobleman, 4 pounds, with a promise to pay the same amount yearly during his life. From a merchant, the bequest of 200 pounds. From a little child, with its love and its prayers, 4 pence half penny. From an Englishman, 4 pounds. From a pastor, 3 shillings. From a schoolmaster, 2 shillings. Page after page of such entries, I could transcribe, the sums ranging all the way from a few pence up to 1,000 pounds. They are repetitions, it is true, one of another, with a slight change of names and amounts, but the effect on the mind, on seeing the stupendous columns and the immense aggregates, makes one cry out, "What hath God wrought?" In the letters accompanying these gifts, all the sweet Bible words about faith in God, all the gracious promises of God were revealed and used to fill my heart with joy. But it would defeat my purpose to reproduce them all here. Enough has been given already to show how graciously God led us, how hard he tried us at first, how widely he opened his hand afterwards when we had proved him, and showed us that indeed he had a blessing for us too large to receive. End of chapter 7. Having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean, none of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Faith's work perfected. Chapter 8, The Act of Incorporation, Sickness in the House. In 1698, the Prussian Government recognized my work and its public utility by giving me a regular act of incorporation and by allowing me to solicit contributions in all parts of the kingdom. This, my friends, considered a giant step gained, and I do not wish to say that it may have been to my advantage, for doubtless it was in accordance with the wise, though hidden purpose of God, but the consequences which followed it were, judging by human appearances alone, far from beneficial to my undertaking. One thing which stood in my way was the cost of collecting contributions. But when you consider the difficulty and expense of procuring a small army of collectors, of the right stamp, men both capable and trustworthy, you will see that only in the shrewdest manner could the bare cost of collecting be met, not to speak of accumulating a great sum for an object so little known and understood as mine. For the orphan house in Haley was the first one of its kind in Germany. The public mind was not prepared to admit its claims unchallenged, and it was a great work to get a hearing. The end was that only in Berlin and in three provinces did I make any attempt by collecting contributions, and therewith but meager success. But other evils came in. It was commonly supposed that because the government had recognized the institution, it had largely endowed it and would provide amply for all its wants. Those who had known of my trials supposed them at an end, and congratulated me on my good fortune and the happy issue of those wearisome years of poverty and uncertainty. Those who had been donors before now ceased to give, for they saw no necessity longer of individual contributions now that the state had taken the orphan house in charge, and not only so, but they felt free to send us any number of poor and homeless children, supposing that our endowment was ample enough to meet any exigency. It was even reported that I was in the receipt of £2,400 yearly from the Prussian government. No wonder that I was overrun with applications. Between the neglect of friends on the one hand, and the fancied idea of my liberal allowance from the king, and the crowds of applicants on the other, I was worse off than I had ever been. I should have been glad to go back to the old ways. In fact, I found the principle of dependency on faith and prayer the best. While I relied on God, I was successful. But when I began to congratulate myself on gaining a strong arm of flesh, I began to see my weakness. After all, the way in which I began asserting itself as more reliable in all its contingencies and extensions than the help of any of an earthly king, however kindly disposed and strong. One of the sorest evils we had to contend with, in consequence of the crowded state of the house, was sickness. We were remarkably favored indeed, and receiving without expense the service of an eminent physician of Leipzig, in assisting our own house doctor in difficult cases. Yet the rooms were so full that it made it very difficult to care properly for the sick. Added to this was the fact that the year 1699 was signalized by the providence of a peculiarly malignant type, a fever which seized on the most vigorous and blooming, sparing the weak and ill conditioned. We contended with it in vain. It seized upon the teachers as well as the taught, and hurried them into a common grave. No medicine then known seemed to have any power to stay its course. It yielded to no treatment. We knew not which way to turn to stop its ravages, but I bethought me of the power of prayer, and God graciously heard me. And not long after, a physician in another place sent me a specific, which proved efficacious in saving life and in averting the disease. And I am sure that it will not be thought fanciful that God should be able to stay the progress of disease by blessing the use of natural agents and by directing the attention to them. He does not arrest sickness by naked power, but he is abundantly able to incline the hearts of skilled physicians to serve the poor. And he is not less able to direct the mind than the heart, and can easily open human eyes to the hidden uses of nature in healing diseases. I will not close this chapter without acknowledging the kindness and true Christian spirit of all the people who have approached me claiming to be friends of the enterprise. It might be supposed that some might be drawn to me in the hope of a pecuniary advantage or selfish aims, but I have never found traces of that spirit. A lofty disinterestedness has always been the most striking characteristic of those with whom I have had dealings. It would be pleasant to speak in detail of benefactors of the house, but I cannot do so. And in fact, one wonderful feature of all of the Lord's conduct of this matter has been that the names of the donors have been unknown to me even to this time. This hints at the true undertone of the whole, that the springs were indeed moved of God, that men gave as they were moved by the Holy Ghost. Hardly a great gift came unacquainted with the name of the donor that was withheld out of modesty, which I did not always understand, but now know to have been indicative of the need that God should have all the glory. End of chapter 8, having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Face Work Perfected, chapter 9. Greater difficulties than the want of money. Triumphant deliverancy. It must be thought by my reader that pecuniary difficulties were the only ones that I had to contend with. There were others that were more trying to my feelings than even the narrow circumstances to which I was subjected. True, it was a daily trial of faith to rely implicitly on the care of Providence. Those who have a full purse know that it is no slight thing to provide for the wants of some hundreds of persons, but with nothing in the latter and with nothing in the purse, it needs no imagination to see that one must be hard-pressed oft-times to know which way to turn, and that I often was, for it did not always happen that God met my wants just at the hour of need. Sometimes I was compelled to cry out with the psalmist, "How long, O God, how long?" And I have known the time when, for want of money to buy a few candles, we have all spent a whole evening in darkness and been brought to pretty sharp hunger. But harder to bear than this were the misapprehensions of people who tried to work upon the public mind and prejudice it against me. All kinds of charges were made, and those opposed to religion were influenced to believe that I was an impostor or a fanatic. Those were provings of my spirit more subtle and powerful than any others I have met. It was said that it was madness to build on so huge a scale what could a vast system of houses be for. Why not confine myself to the accommodations with which I begun? I made brief answer to this, that the Lord was rich enough to pay for it all, that I had not gone to work without counting the cost, for I knew that the great steward of the universe would think the paying of the expenses of the orphan house at Haiti a very little thing. It was said that I abused the children, that I gave them food, which swine ought not to eat, and meager at that. Such idle reports I could not meet in palatable shape and disprove them, but they died at last, as all lies well. Yet it was sore to bear this, for though we were at times pinched for food, yet it was very seldom. My pecuniary embarrassments were more generally in a way of my going on with the building than with the common wants of the body, and there was never any protracted suffering. There was such system in the whole direction that I knew just how everything was managed, and I knew that the table was always wholesome and abundant enough. It was alleged that large sums of money came into my hands, which I appropriated to my private use, that I was laying up riches for my family to enjoy after my death, and at this stung as a poisoned arrow, it needed faith, a great deal of faith in God, to go on my way along such charges as this. But God bade me look up and go on. The rumors of the great amounts of money laying in my hands drew crowds of orphans and indigent people to my door, far more than I had any accommodations for, spacious as we were the new buildings. It was said that I had one room full of money. Gifts of $10,000 were spoken of as of not unfrequent occurrence, and it was reported that my great trouble was to know what to do with it all. Meantime, the public never saw into the real state of the case. During all the time when hundreds were thronging in, I was never a day without being more or less straitened. Large and frequent as were the donations, after the work was fairly underway, yet they never surpassed our urgent needs. And while crowds were standing in the outer hall, some living at a great distance from Haley and demanding help, my steward would sometimes be in close consultations how we could give our own orphans a dinner. Thus, wrongly was I misjudged and evil spoken of. It was also said that I was becoming secular in my habits, that having become a businessman I had lost all my pious habits, that I was engrossed in money affairs and could not be expected to attend to religion at the same time. God forgive those my accusers and give them more of what they missed in me.
They said also that I neglected my pastoral office, for it will not be forgotten that all this time I was a pastor and had my own church to care for, and it is true that the great and growing interest of the orphan house drew me away from the duties of my pastorate, but I saw that my place was made good by a man of great excellency and worth, and not till then did I feel that I could accept the new trust that God had plainly assigned me. I remained the nominal pastor, and as far as I could, I supervised the spiritual interests of my church. But the adjutant pastor assumed the most of the activity labors of the position. But it would be in vain for me to recount all the false and wicked charges which were brought against me. Happily, God strengthened me so that I went on despite them all. The openly irreligious people made light, of course, of an undertaking that rested on prayer and faith as its basis, and it grieved me to see their unconcealed opposition. But worse than theirs was the faithlessness of cold-hearted nominal believers, men who pretended to trust God, but who could not take Him at His promise. But the end justified all my confidence and shamed their unbelief. I had not reckoned the result proved without my host. I became more than conqueror through Him that loved us and died for us. And the orphan house at Haley, with its ample appointments and its flourishing dependencies, stands as the visible monument of the wonderful favor of God. The favor of the Prussian government has been displayed to me in a remarkable degree, in the favor of good men, not in my own country alone, but throughout all Christendom. The institution is, at the time that I write, put on such a foundation that, humanly speaking, and as far as can be seen now, it will be a perpetual blessing to Germany and the world. Its funds are ample, and its management has, I have every assurance, the public confidence. For all this I desire now, and while I live, to bless the Lord. He was my counselor from the beginning, and my leader all through the world. And to Him, and Him alone, be all the glory. And chapter 9, having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Faith's Work Perfected. Chapter 10, The Result. I stated in a letter by Baron Canstein, footnote, the writer of this letter was later the founder of the Canstein Bible Society, an institution which publishes its works at Frankie Orphan House and sends them forth from there. It has been a great blessing to Germany and is still an active operation. End of the footnote. In 1706, to a member of the Prussian government, my dear sir, I have recently visited the great establishment at Hale, which was founded and has been brought to its present advanced prosperity by Professor Franke of the university in that city. My visit was so pleasant and so quickening to my faith that I cannot deny myself the privilege of describing the institution as it exists now, a kind of little world, yet all in harmony and a state of great efficiency. The history of the rise of this home for orphans with its despondent schools is not a common one. It is not the commonplace development of an institution which has been fostered by government patronage, but it is one that began in faith and has been continued in faith up to the present time, relying on the great fact that God is, that He still moves, as well as has His being. Professor Franke has been emboldened to go on with this work, beginning it without capital and only expecting that God would provide from day to day. He had dared to build a system of edifices of palatial size, believing that God would dispose the hearts of His children to give the necessary means, and He has been justified in His trust, for the orphan house is complete, is paid for, and is still in the receipt of means to sustain its usefulness. Frankie's institution, as it perhaps ought strictly to be called, is a unit by virtue of one controlling purpose, viz. The exercise of a wise charity, and by virtue of a strong, clear mind and will, which direct all its movements. Professor A.H. Franke is pastor of the church in GLAUCHA, a suburb of Haley, and a professor in the University of Haley. Yet, unit though it is, it unifies many diverse things and is made up of parts in themselves very unlike. It is a bundle of sticks which do not resemble one another at all, and yet make a whole of great strength and unity. I will speak of these parts one by one. The first is the Divinity School, an institution which grew out of the necessity of helping poor students of theology. and of using their services at the same time as teachers of the destitute children. From the very first, Frankie employed indigent young men studying in the university as his co-laborers in the orphan house and in the schools for the poor. Many a young man had been saved to the ministry in consequence of this help. Many a wise teacher has been trained by the pre-preparatory drill which he has gained under Frankie. Funds came in from the very first to help indigent students, and they now enjoy a free table in the general dining room of the house. They have apartments for study and receive special instruction in the ancient languages. Professors in the university come to the orphan house and give their lectures on Hebrew, Greek, and Oriental language. The Hebrew Bible is now printing in the house under the aspects of the professor in this department, and thus ends so varied are made to help each other. The students are always at hand when they are needed as instructors. The cost of providing their food is a light expense when so many hundreds are to be fed, and the rooms are as commodious as those of the universe proper for the purpose of lectures. The teacher's seminary, as a theological seminary, was mainly for the advantage of young men who wished to become clergymen. It was early deemed good to found a department where thorough teachers may be trained. The needs of the orphans and the destitute children were so urgent at the outset that Frankie had to look around to secure help, and none stood so ready at his hand as young men of needed circumstances who wished to gain an education. Many of these were pious and exercised a healthful religious influence over the young. He began with only 10, giving them a home with him and a small salary besides, and claiming from 3 to 5 hours daily of them as teachers. The increase of the schools demanded an increase of instructors, and the number expanded gradually to its present size. The studies pursued in the seminary are mainly those which will be of special service in teaching the children, and far more attention is given to a thorough acquaintance with the rudiments than with branches which will be foreign to their after use. The means for providing all these men with their living in the stipend which is paid to them have always come as the response to faith. No man has been asked for it. No provision has been made by the government for it. All has been an answer of the fervent, effectual prayer of the righteous man. This department has been a great blessing to the orphan house, and I might even say to Germany. For the 5 years commence of instruction secure the most competent instructors for the great schools of the kingdom. The free table. The free table is an excellent feature in Frankie's institution, and one which finally illustrates the faith of the founder. It was, humanly speaking, very hazardous for a clergyman without means to open his house to 12 young men and offer them their board free. But Frankie did it and was justified in it. He believed in God, and it was imputed to him for righteousness, and the Lord opened the hearts of his children, so that in a short time Frankie gave their meals to yet 12 more, soon to 12 more, and now the number is almost 100 of these young men who sit down in the great hall of the orphan house. This provision secures an ample supply of wholesome food to these young students, for it was found to be the case that many were so self-denying in their efforts to gain an education that they begrudged themselves the adequate supply of nourishing food. But now they must have it, and besides, a dollar is spent to far better advantage when laid out in providing for hundreds than for one. The free table affords also an excellent opportunity for Professor Frankie to study the character of the young men. If any are impostors, he finds it out, and they know each other and are better known than they could be if they lived alone and boarded themselves. The table, too, is made a means of religious improvement. A chapter of Scripture is read, and remarks are made. A hymn is sung, and a constant effort is made to keep in mind the bountiful hand of God. Nor does this lead to a mechanical, perfunctory service, as it might under other circumstances. But the peculiar history of the institution and the unquestioned faith of Professor Frankie make every meal a religious enjoyment and a means of grace. The Latin School. If Frankie's institution has any offshoot which is not connected with it by the tie of organic life, it is this. It is a school for the children of the nobility and of people well-to-do in the world who desire instruction in the advanced branches. It took its rise thus when Frankie was beginning his schools for the poor and for orphans, it was soon found out in Haley and the neighborhood that he was a man of remarkable sound judgment, energy, Christian character, and skill as an educator. He was earnestly asked to select young men whom he might recommend unqualifiedly as private tutors and let them go from his humble house to the mansions of the rich. This he did not choose to do. He preferred to keep the young men around him and have an eye to all their progress. But he proposed to certain of the nobility to send their sons to live under his roof, and be instructed there. They did so, and the Latin school thus sprung into being. At first embracing but 12 pupils, but now after a lapse of only about 10 years, embracing between 50 and 60, here instruction is given in the ancient and modern languages, in all the polite branches of literature, and in the sciences. Yet it would be unfair to pass by the fact that this institution is not and has never been self-supporting. Were it not for the other schools, Professor Franke would not receive enough, even from the rich, to be able to educate their sons. So the Latin school links in with all the rest and shares a common blessing. The same living and loving God watches over its interests, who watches over all the rest. The same beneficence which preserves the school for orphans preserves the school for the sons of noblemen. God's hand is extended in blessing over the whole great institution. The orphan house proper. The fourth department is that of the orphans, embracing the system of buildings where they are lodged and have their instructions. The name orphan house is given indeed to the whole congeners of buildings, but it is apparent that the home of the orphans is but a part of Franke's institution. Yet it is the part which most fills the public eye and draws the public sympathy, and it is to that Franke has devoted himself with the most assiduous care. The main building devoted to this purpose is 6 stories in height, about 150 feet wide, and is handsomely finished. It is by far the largest building in the city, and is really imposing in its appearance. There are many military brackets, which only give the observer the idea of size. But the main building of the orphan house is not only colossal in proportion, but symmetrical, and a great ornament to the city. The whole house is built in the form of a hollow square, and the buildings on the 3 sides of the rectangle are not elegant, simply commodious. It is a large building on the 4th side which attracts the most attention, standing as it does on one of the large public squares of the city. There are buildings adapted to all the varied wants of a large colony of children. A bakehouse, a brew house, a slaughterhouse, a gymnasium, a wash house, together with the dining, sleeping, and school rooms needed for more than 1,000 souls. And all this was built without any accumulation of capital. From day to day, the Lord provided what was required, and Franke received in answer to his prayers without asking the assistance of any man every dollar to pay the workmen and buy all the materials. He began with nothing. He never was beforehand with his means, yet he received so much that through venturing to build the brick and stone and in an expensive fashion of finish, he was not in arrears for this work. It is a signal trial of faith, and it is so regarded by all true Christians. Since the work was done, the same loving Father has continued to supply all the wants of the inmates, and although there have been hours of darkness, yet the Lord has always shown his mercy in the end. The Apothecary's Department. The frequent cases of sickness in so large a collection of children early made it necessary to provide for this class of needs. The Apothecary Department, now of much magnitude, began with the boiling of herbs for tea, and with the preparation of common household medicaments, medicaments. It now has its large dispensary with separate rooms for putting up and storing medicines, and is much used by the inhabitants of the city. Some of the remedies which have been employed by the house physician have proved signally efficacious, and a gentleman in possession of a medicine called by him ESSENTIA and then DULCIS bequeathed the recipe of its manufacture to Professor Franke. The income from this source is very large, $20,000 yearly, and the cures which have been made wrought by it amazing and are certified to by the leading regular physicians of the city and neighborhood.
The gift of this gentleman has done much to enrich the institution and to put it on a permanent foundation. The bookstore. Very early, Professor Frankie provided the children who came under his charge with books. And as the institution has advanced and the need of a department to meet this want became so obvious as to lead to the establishment of a large bookstore, where are kept all the works published at the institution and a general assortment of useful works, then, too, is now large and meets the wants of a great number of people in the city who make the purchases at the house rather than elsewhere. The publishing department, there having been expressed a wish that a sermon of Frankie's should be widely circulated, a project was started that it be printed in the house. A press was procured, types and ink bought, a printer hired, and the sermon was published. This was the beginning of the publishing department, which, under the blessing of God, has expanded till it has become one of the first establishments of the kind in Germany. Not long after Frankie began to publish, a great impetus was given to the effect by the unexpected proposal of the distinguished Spener that one of his works should issue from the publishing department of the Orphan House. Thenceforward, it became a power in the land, and now not only are all the school books used in the Institute printed and bound under its own walls, but works in Hebrew and the Oriental languages have appeared besides standard religious works. The whole management has been conducted with an eye to the good of the Church of Christ. Nothing of doubtful characters have been allowed to appear, and Frankie's wise and careful supervision has been bestowed on every work issued. The fonts and types in the Greek, Hebrew, Syriac, and Arabic characters are among the most complete in the land. Among the works of a learned character issued may be mentioned Boyle's dissertation on the style of the scriptures translated into French and German. The binding and the printing house have been self-supporting, as much of the labor is done by the larger lads in the schools. The distinguished author of this letter does not refer to the great Bible publishing department established by himself within the Orphan House, using its presses, bindings, etc., and well known to this day as the Canstein Bible Dispository, a most valuable means of circulating the scriptures through Germany. Over 5 million of Bibles have been scattered over the country through Baron Constantine's effort, and there is no cessation in the good work. I may remark that Constantine was the inventor of the art of stereotyping. He first applied it to the Bible issued by him. Ed. Another ELEEMOSYNARD departments. Under the broad roof of the Orphan House are clusters besides all the agencies specified. A home for widows, an establishment for the care of poor people in GLAUCHA, the suburb of Haley in which the buildings stand, and an establishment for strolling beggars. All this great and comprehensive charity has all been carried into effect through the efforts of a single man. Who shall doubt the power of faith? Who shall now doubt the power of prayer? End of chapter 10, having been read by Peter John Parisis, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God. Face, Work, Perfected, or Frankie's Orphan House at Haley. This is chapter 11, the last chapter. Chapter 11, closing note by the editor. Since the introduction of this little work was written, and the rest of its pages were culled from Frankie's voluminous documents and translated, I have been so happy as to pay another visit to this flourishing institution. It still maintains its old reputation, and never was it more influential for good than at the present day. The director, Dr. Kramer, a brother-in-law of the great geographer Carl Ritter, is not only eminent for his attainments in Greek literature, but for his efficiency as a manager of a great and complex system of schools and foundations like this. In the Latin school, I had the pleasure of meeting and making the acquaintance of the distinguished geographer, Professor Daniel, the German editor of Ritter's University Lectures, a man of great urbanity and of the kindest presence. But a word of special acknowledgement is due to Dr. T-S-C-H-I-S-C-H-N-I-T-Z, the English teacher in the institution who did me the favor to conduct me to every part of the great pile of buildings. Let no visitor to Hale fail to call upon this courteous gentleman, who is quite at home in our language, and who will, I am quite sure, be pleased to act as
Sisera. The statue of Frankie, executed by a great sculptor, Runch, stands near the end of the square, enclosed by the buildings, and is the most happy conception, portraying the good man with an orphan child grasping each hand. The buildings recently erected, especially the Riel School, testify to the constant expansion of the institution and its ability to meet new wants, and the one just referred to might, for elegance and conveniency, be taken as a model in England or America. Nor has the printing department fallen behind, while so much else has been advancing. No greater contrast can be easily conceived than between the reports of Frankie which I have used in the preparation of this work and the books which are published at the Orphan House now. Some of them works of great eminence, such as the German edition of the Robinson's Biblical Researches. Indeed, the printing now executed there is so admirable that many English printing houses carry their books to the Orphan House Press. I mention these things to show how faithful God still remains to those who have continued faithful to Him. One cannot go into the distant dining room and see 500 lads, neatly dressed, light-hearted, well-mannered, come and take their places while one of their number repeats the familiar German graces. Lord Jesus, come and be our guest, and let thy blessing be on us rest. Without feeling grateful that Frankie lived and made all things ready so that the destitute children, almost 200 years after him, should have all this care and good nature. And thus it is, whatever else may fail, God abides sure. His promises are as durable as the foundations of the earth. Whoever else prove false, God may be trusted. Frankie was a simple-hearted, true-believing man, but every man in our time who has the same faith may have the same blessing. For God and Christ are the same yesterday, today, and forever. The end. The end of chapter 11. The end of the book, Face, Work, Perfected, by Augustus Herman Frankie. This has been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God.